This is the Rappaport Diamond Podcast, and now your host, Sonia Estersultani.
Welcome to this new episode of the Rappaport Diamond Podcast. I'm your host, Sonia Estersultani, editor-in-chief of Rappaport. My guest today is Rachel Taylor, a well-established jewelry writer, author, and consultant. Rachel and I, we're going to say who we think did the best campaign for diamonds in 2023. We're also going to question whether celebrities bring something special to diamond jewelry. And finally, we have plenty of insights from Rachel on how to market diamond jewelry successfully. Enjoy.
Hi, Rachel. I'm so happy to have you back on this podcast. Usually, I'm not really on this podcast. I have two brilliant colleagues, Joshua Friedman and Leah Mirovich, hosting, but I'm happy because it's our second podcast together. And today, we are back to discussing dazzling diamonds. So, hi, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonia. It's really nice to be back and to see you and to do another podcast. So, thanks.
That's great. So, let's start. Award season is over. I've been thinking of all the publicists having this massive sigh of relief. This is it. We're done for this year.
I am also having a sigh of relief. You know, because you're on all the same lists, but your inbox, as soon as there's been any kind of red carpet or awards, it's like, I just know, I really dread opening it the next day. It's just about, I don't know, 1,000 emails of who was wearing which jewels, which is really interesting and good to know, but also it's a lot. But yeah, I've been thinking about the publicists as well, because, you know, they're obviously having to stay up, like a lot of them through the night, because they don't know. So I think often how it works, or what I've been told, is they'll submit jewelry, but they don't actually know until they watch the red carpet themselves, and then they have to react really quickly. So it must be so stressful.
It must be. Yeah, don't envy that job. It's a bit easier if you're on the main list of the celebrities that have contracts with, you know, the big, big names like Tiffany & Co., Harry Winston, Bulgari, because you know that they're going to wear the jewelry, especially for the biggest award ceremonies. We had Francesca Simon on an interview, who's a famous publicist in New York, and she says, you see celebrities wearing more smaller designers on less well-known or less costly on TV shows or interviews, but for the big events, you know they're going to wear the brands that they have a contract with, which I found not very inspiring. Even if the jewelry is beautiful, it's not a criticism of the actual jewelry at all. You know, I love seeing beautiful Tiffany jewelry, but I just found it very predictable and a bit commercial.
Because part of it is the surprise, isn't it? You want to see what people are wearing. And when it is a big brand, they might create something amazing. You know, when Lady Gaga wore the Tiffany diamond, you know, that was a really special moment because obviously only a few women in history have worn it. But in reality, it's mostly, you know, brands, I think, aren't necessarily creating these sort of really incredible pieces specifically for the red carpet. It tends to be, I don't know, pieces from high jewelry collections. So yeah, slightly less exciting.
Is there a single look that you enjoyed this past season? Not just the Oscars, but everything we've seen, the Golden Globes, SAG. I mean, there's so many, I lost track at some stage.
Do you know what? I'm having absolute blindness when you're asking me that. I think it's just been like a sea of diamonds. There's been some beautiful looks, but I wouldn't say, for me, and I'm sure people would love to contradict this, but each season or each awards ceremony, there's often like a really iconic look that everybody's talking about. I kind of feel like that's been missing this season. I don't feel there's been like one look that everybody's really kind of lost their minds over. You might think otherwise. Maybe there was one that you really liked, but
I agree. And I wasn't even excited. I just checked out of professional duty in the morning after that happened. Just I go on Instagram, I check who wore what. Am I seeing something? Actually, I saw Michelle Yeoh was wearing a Cindy Chow brooch at the Oscars. And I thought that was really, really beautiful because that's all jewelry coming on the Oscars. It was so perfect with her. So that's actually one of the looks I enjoyed discovering.
Also, I think there's been some celebrities are wearing vintage pieces of jewelry. That happens every so often, but it's not in the same way. You know, there's been this real kind of green carpet drive with the fashion to wear like couture pieces from decades gone by. I feel like there's not the same focus on jewelry yet, but it's perfect for it. You know, it would be so great to kind of highlight that they're wearing, you know, a piece, I don't know, from the 50s or 60s. And I think that could be a real area. Maybe that's going to come next, you know, but then that also goes back to the whole contract idea. And actually, are they being paid to wear the newest pieces rather than maybe experiment with something in the archives?
That's such a good point. I like to see, we saw a lot of Fred Leighton jewelry. So, you know, vintage jewelry from New York. I saw it on Margot Robbie, actually at the Oscar. So she had a black dress, a strapless dress, and she had this really nice cup from Fred Leighton. So, you know, I like estate jewelry, so I was excited, especially if it's on the Barbie actress. And we saw René Boivin piece as well on one of the other ceremonies. I forgot which one, I'm sorry. You know, beautiful necklace by Boivin. Carrie Mulligan, if I'm not mistaken. And she wore it very nicely. But it's, yeah, I agree with you. That would be the biggest sustainable statement they could make.
Yeah, completely. Every jewel would have a story as well. So there'd be more to talk about rather than... Because I feel that way about the dresses. When suddenly you can connect it to like a show from 1994, it kind of takes you back and makes you think about what the influences were at that time. And yeah, jewelry could be the same. And then hopefully that would get people speaking about more than the fact that it's just X amount of carats of diamonds and really blingy, but actually talk about the craft and the storytelling.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And that's a question actually I would love to open to all our listeners, you know, and to hear back. And I'm going to ask obviously to you first, but that's really something that I would love to know what people are thinking from the industry. Do you think celebrities help the diamond industry by wearing diamonds on the red carpet, in TV shows, you know, in places where they're being snapped by paparazzis?
I don't know. You know, I've been mulling this over. I think celebrities definitely keep diamonds and jewelry visible. You know, they keep it in the headlines, they keep people talking about it. Whether that is going to then influence somebody to buy a piece, I don't know. We were talking before about the idea that everyone's hooked up to a different brand and there's an expectation that they're going to wear something. So actually, I don't know, it'd be more interesting to see a red carpet that had no jewelry. That might get people talking. I think people assume there's going to be big diamonds. So I don't know if that necessarily translates into sales. But then you do have kind of younger celebrities, I suppose, like Zendaya, who is an ambassador for Bulgari, who I think is a really genuinely good ambassador. And sometimes she'll wear pieces from the more accessible ranges, like she'll take the Serpenti kind of like single smaller bracelets, but she'll stack them up. And I can imagine somebody looking at that being like, oh, I would love to buy one of those. You know, obviously a red carpet look is 10 going up the arm, but you know, there's ways that, but a lot of it is so inaccessible. You know, when we're talking about 10 carat diamond earrings, I don't imagine anyone looks at the red carpet and the next day is like, I'm going to go and buy myself some 10 carat diamond earrings. So I don't know. I think they're good hype people for diamonds and jewelry, but whether it translates to sales, I don't know.
I'm also wondering, sometimes I'll even think, is that important to have a celebrity in your marketing campaign? Does that make an actual difference? You know, it's like you see a lot of big houses that working with K-pop celebrities, especially on the Asian market, they seem to be doing very well. But I'm just wondering, for the US market, the European market, does it actually work? Did you see a campaign when you felt like, wow, this is great. This is really your market. You have the right celebrity. It's aligned on your brand. And the campaign is super sleek.
Again, this might be controversial, but I think the best one really from the last year was Pandora's campaign with Pamela Anderson. That was for the lab-grown diamond collection, which I think was a brilliant slogan, which was diamonds for all. Pamela Anderson at the time is having a real moment. She's going through this space where she's not wearing makeup. She's kind of turning up looking really natural to all these events. And she also did that for the campaign. You know, she wasn't heavily made up. And also you had Grace Coddington in that campaign as well, who's kind of an older, beautiful, stylish woman. I think that for me, that really hit. And I thought that was a good use of celebrity power. You know, I think having a celebrity associated with your brand and in your ad campaign, just because everyone else does, and just because they're pretty, and just because, you know, they're an A-lister, I'm not really sure how much that brings to a campaign, because people expect it. And they know that it's a transactional relationship. You know, if a different brand pays that star next year, you know, they'll switch. Whereas with Pamela Anderson, you know, she's also done a lot of, I mean, we know that not all lab-growns are sustainable, but, you know, Pamela Anderson has done a lot of campaigning around ethics and sustainability. So there was kind of that tie. There's also this tie of her going through this evolution. So it was a perfect moment for her as well, coming out and you know, feeling beautiful and being there. So I think that was genius.
I also loved that campaign. I thought that was fantastic. As you say, she's an activist. She crosses generations as well, because if you grew up 20 years ago, you remember her from Baywatch. But for people, you know her later, she's been an activist for PETAs, against animal fur. She's been an activist now for older women not to have their face made up, as you mentioned. And the young women, I think, react to that. They're like, wow, this is very empowering. And I think the campaign was very, very clever. The marketing team behind it, very impressive. We had this conversation before. We tried to remember campaigns from last year, and I couldn't remember anything really impactful. I love the campaign David Yurman is doing, because I think they pick actresses or celebrities that, you know, have this kind of New York chic about them, and it's cool to see. But the others, I haven't seen anything. Do you think there's something that we're missing? Or maybe there's something we could learn from other jewelry designers, maybe not in the high end?
There's only been one. I mean, I like the Pandora campaign. And I will say, I did, you know, De Beers obviously launched that massive $20 million campaign. And I love one line that they used, which was nature's mic drop. I really love that. So I will say that.
Yeah, without celebrities, that was very interesting, right? They let the diamond shine. Really, it was just all about the diamond. And they had, I'm not going to say boring, but very simple jewelry to promote it. Let's put it that way.
I could have definitely designed that on Canva. Do you know? mean, it wasn't a particularly complex campaign. You know, I suppose the impact maybe was in the fact that it was quite minimalist. So that was great. But there is one campaign I have been absolutely obsessing over for months, and it's not in luxury jewelry. It's more in kind of fashion jewelry and like Demi Fine, which is Alexis Bitar. So he's a jewelry designer based in New York. He's really famous for using lucite. So he kind of used to make these, well, he still does make them, but like these lucite bangles, you know, that were really collectible. He does really cool jewelry. But what he's been doing is he's created like a mockumentary style campaign on Instagram. So it's turned into like this, it's almost a series, you know, of short films really that he's putting out on Instagram. And he's created these characters, Margot, who is this Upper East Side, I'll say woman for the sake of being polite on the podcast, but he uses a different word. And she kind of has this assistant who she calls Jules, but whose real name is Hazel, who's like really downtrodden, you know, having to keep up with her and all her crazy antics. And it's brilliant. And it's kind of, I think it started coming out, I think it was last year, in little snippets. You know, you kind of see the interaction between these two characters, instantly engaging, super exciting, never really a hard sell. I mean, they have a couple of funny moments where, you know, Margot's like trying to call up the boutique. She wants to see the latest, like Alexis Bitar, like bags and jewels. But the rest of it is just everybody in the video is wearing the jewelry. And now they started bringing in celebrities to the series as well. And it's become like a bit Real Housewives type vibe, where they're kind of, you know, it's all these kind of like side interviews, and it's really developed into this show. And whenever a new video is dropped on Instagram, I will sit and watch it like it is a TV show. I get really excited and I absolutely love it. And I just think it's really engaging, really funny, really brings personality to the brand, but also just clever product placement, you know? And I actually went and bought two of Alexis's bags off the back of this, which I'd always love the jewelry, but then I started looking at the bags and I was like, I need those. And so I got a couple of his bags, which, you know, I'm literally living proof and example that that works and translates into sales. And now he's kind of got merch coming off the back of it, but it's the real sort of blend of, because it looks quite luxe and it's definitely marketing, but it's also film and it's also social media. It's this amazing blend. And I think maybe the bigger brands could learn something from that. It doesn't have to be a glossy celebrity kind of posing. It can be something real and fun and completely made up and, yeah, just really super creative.
It's a great campaign. If people haven't checked it, I think it's fun. Mm. It's fun to watch. And as you said, what's amazing is actually it has an impact on the bottom line, which is what we want. You know, so it sells. You can identify. And even if you don't identify, because you're entertained and you like the brand authenticity, and you know, and Alexis Bitar is always featured in magazine for a long, long time. You know, like fashion editors love him. Brooke Shield was wearing one of his amazing cuffs. Glamour magazine a few months ago, and you just notice it. You know, it's like it has this impact. The same way as when an actress would wear Elsa Peretti cuff, the bone cuff. This is cool. This is statement jewelry, and it's more affordable than the Tiffany & Co. cuff as well. Because the people that he used, now you mentioned that he's going to introduce celebrities, but do you think influencers actually today are more impactful than the A-list Hollywood celebrities?
I think so. And there's actually somebody that I wanted to talk about in this podcast. She's actually in the industry, but I would definitely class as an influencer. Julia Chaffee, I apologize for doing your pronouncing your last name wrong, but she works for Intercolor, so she's a gem dealer. But she started creating these really amazing videos under the name Jewels with Jewels. Really fun videos, high energy, looking at celebrity jewelry, but her talking about it and her take on it. Also, but giving people an insight into the industry, you know, day in the life, what she's doing, going to trade shows. She went to the Gem Awards in New York on the red carpet and interviewed people. And I love her. I think she's brilliant and she just brings this energy. You know, I'd be more likely to covet or want to buy some diamonds off the back of her excitement about celebrities rather than just seeing a celebrity. And I think maybe this is kind of a new, it almost feels like this is an emerging area, kind of almost like industry influencers, you know, insiders. I feel like we haven't really had a lot of that before. And that's kind of starting to come out now a little bit, which is brilliant, because before it was often influencers, it might be fashion influencers talking about jewelry. You know nothing about jewelry. You know, they don't know anything. Whereas if we have these insiders now who are kind of creating that really fun content, but also have the knowledge like Julia does, I think that's really exciting. And that's got the potential to, I think, maybe sway people or get people interested in jewelry.
And when you see the number of likes she's getting, it's clearly not the trade just liking her videos. She's reaching this amazing consumer base. And I agree with you. It's educational, it's fun, it's informative, it's full of energy and full of personality. And that's what you want. You want to watch because of, you know, this match, and she has great pictures. And I love it. I think she's such a great example. I'm happy you mentioned her. I think it feels authentic as well with her. As we know, influencers are the new A-list celebrities. So they get to wear a lot of stuff just because it's contracted, not because they feel a passion for it. Last year, I was very interested in the Cartier watch. You remember how the Benoit, I'm sure you saw it at Watches and Wonders. And I think it was sold out within a few months after being released. And it wasn't because of celebrities wearing them. It was, I guess, a few influencers obviously wore it on Instagram, but people got mad for this watch. It has a diamond version, the plain gold. And they have the diamond set version as well. So what did you think was so good in that campaign? Or is just the product being fantastic? And that's it. That sometimes it's strong enough.
Do you know, I think it was the product. And you're right. It became a running joke after Watches and Wonders because that watch was on everybody's feed. You know, like everyone that I follow who'd gone and had an appointment at Watches and Wonders was posting this watch. So just for weeks, it just kept popping up. I wonder if that's kind of the power as well, you know, because I don't really, obviously I saw it on Cartier's website. I don't really remember seeing any big campaigns about it, but that was almost like a watch that went viral in a way. And I had posted something about it. I had loads of messages about it, you know, people wanting to know more, where could they get it? And it's interesting, you know, you can tell by the kind of interactions that you get. And I spoke to lots of people who'd also been posting about it and said exactly the same, you know, people had just gone wild for it. But then again, I think that's the power of multiple people posting.
Right. And I don't remember a piece of jewelry going viral the same way as this watch went last year. And the fact that there was a waiting list, it was sold out, and new people were trying to get someone to buy it for them somehow or push in it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yeah, I suppose the other big recent viral piece of jewelry, but you can't really buy it, was Megan Fox's engagement ring that Stephen Webster made. I can't remember if that was last year or the year before, but maybe people are still talking about it because I still see that coming up every so often, you know? And for me, that felt like a real viral piece of jewelry, but it doesn't happen very often, you know, with a single piece of jewelry. And I think, again, I don't know if that's something brands could think about or try and tap into. And it's so hard because you can't make something go viral. It's this mystical thing that just happens when the mood is right. But as a strategy, I mean, that seems so much more powerful now than having an A-list celebrity, you know, in a glossy campaign.
And tell me, I mean, now we're going to ask you for free advice as a consultant. So the people listening, if you were to recommend, let's say, an independent jewelry retailer or a young designer starting, how would you tell them to promote their diamond jewelry? And I'm saying diamond as lab-grown and mined, but just in terms of visual or in terms of story, what do you think is the most important today for someone to promote diamond jewelry?
In terms of visuals, I think it's important to show it on the hand or in the body, but I think unless you have some huge diamonds, that doesn't always come across, especially if you're a designer starting out. So it's really important to sort of maybe have these kind of campaign images. But also I think what's really important is to have close crops, you know, take a nice shoot, but zoom in, and I find it's more engaging. I don't know, somebody standing doing a really awkward hand pose, trying to get the ring and the earrings and the necklace all in one shot. But yeah, I think that's obviously it's important to have it on, but I don't know, just there's interesting ways of doing it. I think quality underpins everything. And I think jewelry is incredibly hard, and diamonds are incredibly hard to take images of. So I think if you have to invest in working with a professional, I would, just because you can have the nicest campaign in the world, but if that diamond looks a bit cloudy or a bit, it's just not sharp enough, it's really hard to get that across. What's really important as well is just make it authentic to your brand and your clients that you're trying to reach. You know, this is an example I probably use too much, but if you're an independent designer maker who is selling to women in their 20s and 30s buying their first pieces of diamond jewelry, don't shoot it on a boat in Monaco. You know, shoot it on somebody who looks like them, who's, you know, wearing jeans, because diamond jewelry is intimidating. And I think anything we can do to make it less intimidating is important. And that could be something really simple, like introducing fun, you know, shoot it on a colored background. It doesn't have to be massively complicated, but I think just keeping it fun, keeping it contemporary, but at the same time, never letting that quality of image drop. I think that's so important, whether you get an amazing retoucher in or whether you get and work with an amazing photographer, or you can do it yourself, but it just has to, especially if you're selling online, you know, because something like beautiful in real life, and then you look on somebody's website and you've seen it in real life and you know it's amazing, and then you look at the image that they're putting out and you're like, that's never gonna sell. No. So yeah, I think that's the quality above all is important.
Thank you so much. That's a great advice. And to close this podcast, I would like to think together, where do you see marketing for diamonds heading off? Where is needed? And what do you see also because of all the people you meet and all the the different conversations that we're having and the people coming from different backgrounds. Where do you see this is going? What can we expect? How can we really market diamonds and celebrate them and honor the stone?
I think it's almost going to become more bespoke in a way. I think people are really trying to drill down into who they're trying to speak to. I think we're moving away from this general luxury conversation of aspirational, investment-driven, wealth-driven. I think we're moving away to that and we're really thinking about who's buying them. And I think what we might see is actually split campaigns. And I think that's why I don't think celebrity marketing is ever going to go away with diamonds and jewelry. I think we do need that next step because it's a prestige product. It has an incredible legacy with the red carpet and a history. And I can't imagine that ever going away. You know, that's always going to be one element and that's going to be prestige. But in reality, I think we're going to see a lot more kind of groundwork on more authentic marketing to people who are actually buying and thinking about what they want, thinking about how they shop and thinking about how to talk to them. And I think naturally that's going to become, so for younger clients, that's going to become more casual, more conversational. I would say more education driven. I think diamonds are still a scary thing to buy. And I think that needs to, any education that you can offer, but also just thinking about how women actually buy and wear diamonds. You know, it's majority of time, maybe it's not to go to a gala. It's maybe just to wear every day with a pair of jeans to go meet friends for coffee. And I think it's okay to embrace that and to admit that's how we wear diamonds. We don't all have to pretend that we're on the red carpet with a ball gown. It's, you know, it's real life. It's running around with the kids. You know, you still want to have that kind of everyday luxury. And I think it's going to be, I think the conversation is going to change. And I think the conversation is going to be more inclusive with a client rather than projecting an image of what you think they want. I think it's going to be getting down with them and really engaging in a meaningful way.
Oh, that's fantastic. I like this vision as well. The more inclusive and more real is so important. And if the industry heads there, I think we can capture the young generation. So that would be great because it seems like, yeah, Pandora, great example. But, you know, I think that's the equivalent to be achieved in the natural diamond industry as well. So thank you so much, Rachel. It was so interesting. Always love having you on the podcast. We might make you a regular.
Definitely. I'd love that. No, it's always good to chat jewelry with you. I could do it all day long.
Thank you so much, Rachel. And as I said, please, 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 if you listen to this podcast, we'd love to hear from you. Send us comments and news@rapapple.com about what you think about marketing natural diamonds, working with celebrities. How do you see it as an impact on the bottom line? We'd love to have people from the industry telling us what they think. So please tell us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Rapapport Diamond Podcast. For more discussions, news, and analysis about the diamond industry, visit us at rapapport.com. Follow Rapapport Group on Instagram and follow Rapapport on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And don't forget to subscribe to get future episodes.